31 is where we are, and where we've been. We're going to look to finish. But remember that that Jacob is fleeing Laban. He's convinced that Laban is not going to let him go, that he's actually going to take his daughters away, just like he has changed his wages 10 times, multiple times. He seems like he's legitimately afraid that the wages that he received from those 14 years of serving for his two daughters will be changed by Laban even well after the fact. And so he sees no choice but to leave. And this because God has blessed him, increased his possessions, and that at the cost of Laban. So Jacob leaves, and Laban hears about it. He gets a three-day head start. Laban catches up to him on the 10th day, and we're in the middle of their kind of back and forth. And where we just ended, where we ended last time, was after Laban has made the accusation that you stole my gods. Why'd you do that? And so serious accusation, and that on top of leaving without prior notice, that would give cause for Laban to drag Jacob back, to take everything from him. And basically ruin everything. So like God's promises are actually on the line in this interaction. What is it that Jacob doesn't know? Because Jacob says, I don't know what you're talking about with stealing gods. What does Jacob not know? That Rachel, his beloved wife, Rachel, took them, right? And so we get this dramatic search where Laban searches through Jacob's tent, Leah's tent, and two female servants. But he goes from Leah's tent to Rachel's tent. Doesn't find anything, but then he comes to Rachel, who's sitting on this camel saddle, and that's where she had hidden them. And Laban is feeling all about the tent, did not find him. What does that remind us of when Laban's feeling about and doesn't find anything? Isaac. Yeah, Isaac, when he's feeling about who is this? Is this actually Jacob? Yeah, so the same verb is used, and so Laban's like this blind man, which will be picked up much later on in the Bible as far as here's what idolatry leads to, is blindness. So not necessarily in view in Genesis 31, but definitely a part of it. And so Rachel deceives Laban. So in this case, the deceiver gets deceived, right? Just like Jacob had been. So gets deceived by his own daughter. So there's all sorts of the similar kinds of themes going on there, where deception is going on. Deception is the rule in the family, apparently, which says something about the grace of God and his commitment to his promises. So that gets us up to speed. But did I miss anything up until now? Okay, so I'll read from verse 36 down to the end of the chapter. This is where Jacob rebukes Laban. This is where it starts. Then Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, "What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? For you have felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? See it, or set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the cold by night. And my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters. and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have borne? Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jagar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." Therefore, he named it Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, "The Lord watch between you and me, and we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, "See this heap and the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear of Isaac, of his father Isaac, and Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned home. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. So what'd you notice? What'd you observe? What do you have questions about?
Where are they at on the map at this point?
That's a good question. And I looked at
the
that.
The term hill country makes me think of, you know, Deuteronomy. We're always talking about going up to the hill country.
Yeah, and that's within the land in Deuteronomy.
Right.
This, so they are, so the location that we're given later is Mahanaim. That's north of the Jabbok River. And so that's going to be a little bit, do you have a map to show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where they end up.
Okay.
So they're on the eastern side of the Jordan.
Okay.
And they're kind of, I think they're, what, they're up kind of close to other side of the Sea of Galilee or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe north of there? Northeast of there?
Mine has it south. Like
south of the sea?
It's like halfway between the Sea of Galilee and the
okay.
Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm. Is that Mahanaim or is that the what they're identifying as the
Mahanaim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where Jacob ends up, but where he meets with Laban, I think, is further to the north.
Because they're coming from
basically the northeast, Euphrates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So where they end up is probably a few days after they go their separate ways.
Found it interesting that Laban suggests the covenant.
Yeah. So why do you think Laban is the one who suggests the covenant? First of all, what is the covenant about? What is it? What's an agreement? What is part of the agreement, or the nature of the agreement?
Like a border and
yes,
terms.
Yes. This is here to say you don't come to me, and I don't come to you, right?
To do harm.
Yeah. So, and it establishes God is the witness. And God is the judge. If Jacob does anything, if he adds wives, which would have negative implications for Laban's daughters as his wives, as Jacob's wives, then the Lord's going to deal with you. So he's not saying I'm going to come over and deal with you. He's saying the Lord's going to deal with you. And so that's one of the stipulations there. But it is like a, it is a, Laban is at the point to say, I can't win, and actually he will win. Like, I can't defend myself against him because, well, because the Lord had appeared to him and said, say nothing to him, either good or bad. I just imagine, like, do, that just, that extends to do nothing to him, good or bad. So Laban, that is actually backed into a corner, especially because his accusation has been proven false. The other thing with that, something else to notice with that is that there's a parallel there between that experience and Isaac's experience with the Philistines. So back in chapter 26, Isaac keeps finding water, digging wells, finding water, right? And then some Philistines, not necessarily those who were in charge, but people who are so, not Philistines, but people attached to Abimelech of Gerar, so proto-Philistines or something like that. They keep pushing Isaac out, like, no, this is our water, right? And so they're noticing, eventually Abimelech says, okay, God is for him. God is with him. God is for him. He blesses him. And so we need to have an agreement with Isaac that he's not going to do us any harm. Even though Abimelech's been the one who's been, or at least his people have been the one who have been doing him harm. And Isaac brings that up. And so there's a parallel there to here. The one outside of Abraham's family, Abraham's immediate family here, is the one who initiates the covenant because he's threatened by the one who possesses the promises. So there's a parallel there. That what got worked out with Isaac is getting worked out with Jacob. Jacob gets protection from Laban, a significant enemy. But Laban's the one who seeks that covenant because he recognizes that God's with him. So there'd be a parallel there. Your face looks like...
Is that why in verse 42 it's worded, after he says, the God of Abraham, he says, and the dread of Isaac?
Yes. Okay. This is, so only two places fear of Isaac or dread of Isaac is used. And they're both in this passage, and I think that is saying, okay, linking up with Isaac in particular. It's also setting up for what, so the second time this is used, when Jacob swears only by the fear of Isaac or the dread of Isaac, that actually emphasizes something about Isaac that's not true about Laban, which is the verb that's used there for to judge. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor judge between us. When Laban uses that word, judge, it's actually a plural word. May they judge between us. The God of Abraham and the gods of Nahor, which actually can be translated gods of Nahor. So he's not saying that those two uses of God are the same, refer to the same God. He's saying different God, or different gods, multiple gods. But Jacob only swears by the fear of Isaac.
Which gets back to Laban's household idols.
Yes. So for all Jacob's faults, he doesn't go into idolatry. He doesn't syncretize.
But he's not yet to the point where he's calling his God.
That's true. Quickly, yes.
He's still, it's my father's God, my grandfather's God, mm-hmm. You know, the fear of my father.
That's right. Yeah.
So at the end of 42, that God rebuked you last night.
The very end, God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night.
What's the rebuked you last night?
So that was when he appeared to Laban and warned him, don't say anything either good or bad. And so that's what Jacob's saying.
Jacob knew that?
Well, Laban had already told him. Yeah, he had told him, like, I have all these things against you for what you've done, and yet I can't do anything to you because God appeared to me last night.
Verse 29.
Yeah.
Verse 29. You became a God follower after that.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and that, I put a star there as we were reading through it. That actually is part of like the, what do we learn about God in this passage? This is what's emphasized. He's for Jacob, but not just that he's for Jacob. He's for Jacob in his affliction. And that means that he's against Laban. So God does not have to be for Jacob and against Laban. But once Laban goes against Jacob, God is against Laban. And this is kind of how it gets worked out. This is part of the one of the promises of the embedded within the Abrahamic covenant, that those who bless you, I will bless, right? And so how you treat this family and the nation that's coming from it is determinative of the kind of relationship that you have with God. So this also sets up for like, you know, why does God do what he does to Egypt and the way that he does it? It is in response in his judgment for how they have treated Israel while in the land. Does the same thing to the Sihon and Og, those two kings. They oppose Israel. Well, God's going to wipe them out. So I would say that part of verse 42, that second half of verse 42, is like one of the main points of the whole chapter. Anything else?
So in 50, when Laban, at the end of the covenant part, he says, God is witness between you and me. That's Jacob's God that he is referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's believing Jacob's God at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as somebody who, I mean, if he's got household gods, no, whatever the nature of those household gods, he has a pantheon, and so for him,
that's one more.
The God of Abraham is Jacob's God is just one more to that, and maybe even supreme over those gods, but not necessarily, but still like within that realm, within that realm of divine individual beings. And that's why God makes the point in Isaiah to say, tell me which God of yours that you fashioned with your own hands has done anything. Well, it says this in Deuteronomy, but has taken his people out of a land of another kingdom. And then in Isaiah, tell which of your gods have ever spoken, which of your gods have said this will be, and it comes to pass, and so part of the point that God stresses at different points in the Old Testament, say, I'm unique, like you don't compare me to anybody. So, and that's what Laban does here. He makes a comparison. It's a family God, not the only God. Okay, well let's get going. These are all the things y'all brought up means there'll be less work to do. So that's good. So then Jacob became angry and berated Laban. This is in response to what Laban's failure to make good on his accusation. And this actually stands across from verses 22 to 24, where Laban is in pursuit of Jacob, but God appears to Laban in a dream the night before he confronts Jacob, and this is where he warns him. So Jacob, if it's in parallel, what's the parallel? If the parallel is communicating anything, what is it communicating? It seems to be communicating. Jacob is able to respond in the way that he does to Laban because God is for him. God stands at his back and supports him. And obviously Laban's accusation has failed. So Jacob is basically let off the leash. Like the leash has been loosed, and he's getting after Laban for the first time in his life. So what is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? So your accusation has failed. You've felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? See, set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. So this decide word is a word of judgment, so that they can judge. And so set it here. So you made the accusation. Where's your evidence? Where's your proof? And so, okay, implied, obviously, there's a failure. Now he gets into, here's what you've been doing all along. You make accusations about what I did, what I did when I left. Let me remind you about the last 20 years. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes, your female goats have not miscarried. I've not eaten the ram of your flock. So I've been a shepherd to your flocks. And this, I mean, it's been amazing. No miscarriages. I have not looked at any in your flock as things for my own, like, hey, the worker is worthy of his wages type of thing, you know. Don't muzzle an ox as he's threshing. Jacob says, I haven't approached my work in that way. What was torn by wild beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. So he takes responsibility and even financial responsibility for what was lost. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. So that gets into thieves coming in and taking them. There's a note here. So under just generally the custom of the day, laws of the day in ancient Near East, the shepherd would not have been responsible for these losses. Whether attacks of wild beasts and in some cases theft. And so what Jacob is saying here is, Laban, you've been unjust. Like, according to custom, and you remember back in chapter 29, when all of this starts with we don't do things this way. That's what Laban says about giving Leah instead of Rachel. We don't give the younger before the older. That's not our custom. Laban's subtly turning that back on Laban. You've gone against law. You have treated me unjustly. And then his experience, there I was by day, the heat consumed me and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. And so so when we were in Saudi in February, we were there in February, and it was nice during the day, but then the sun went down and it got cold. Man, it got cold. And so just imagine, like, we went into the place that we were staying and didn't have to deal with the elements and all the wind and all that stuff and the cold. And Jacob saying, this was my life. Like, there was no 70 degrees air conditioning or anything like that. 20 years. These 20 years I've been in your house. So this is key right here. So this is about who's in charge of the household. Jacob has been part of the house, part of Laban's house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. So another thing about injustice, you've been unjust. And so under these circumstances, the physical circumstances, circumstances as far as theft in the flock, wild beasts killing parts of the flock, and Jacob actually bearing the loss of that himself, but then also recognizing the blessing that's been upon Laban's flocks this whole time. What should have happened to Jacob was he should have been ruined. This should have gone really poorly for him. And that's not even counting how Laban has treated him in changing his wages 10 times. And so what's been the determining factor? Verse 42, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side, surely you would not have sent me away, or surely you would have sent me away empty-handed. What would be involved in the empty-handed? Like, what would have been taken away from him? Even the daughters and the children. Laban would have pulled their part of my house. not yours. So if you want to go, you came here alone. If you want to leave, you're leaving alone. Right?
Well, that's what he says in verse 43.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So it's all about the household. Who is the head of Jacob's house? That's what's being established right now. And so Jacob is saying, the only reason I'm in the position that I'm in is because God has protected me. God's been on my side. And he goes back to the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac to say, I'm part of this family. I'm part of this family line. So this does contrast him with Esau, just in an extended way. I think it sets up a little bit for what's about to happen in the meeting with Esau. But it's just a reminder, like, Jacob doesn't run away from his family. I mean, he has run away from his family. Like, not run away, but you know what I mean.
He was sent away.
Yeah, he was sent away. So, but he embraces his family heritage. He embraces his family faith. Does he treat that family faith well all the time? No, not necessarily, but he's learning, right? So that's what Jacob is saying. Everything that I have is due to the Lord, which reminds us of the vow that he made at Bethel. Whatever it is that I have, to you I devote a tenth. If I come back safely, if you deliver me back safely. And so God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked me last night. This is the reason why we're in this situation now, and I'm not in a completely different situation. So any questions or comments at this point?
It's interesting that it almost feels like it's a debate because one goes on the offense. I mean, Laban starts out, you know, you stole my house, stole the gods and blah, 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 idols. And then Jacob goes in the debate, and now it's going to flip back the other way.
Yeah.
And then they both go on offense and defense almost a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's not – and here, when we get into verse 23, like – Laban responds, but he's on his heels.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he doesn't have any options.
Yeah.
Yeah. So things, Laban's last straw was the stolen out. And what's ironic, he was right.
Yeah.
He was right.
Yeah.
And so what are we, I mean, yeah, Rachel deceived, lied, hid. But how was she not found out? God. Right? And so if she's found out, let me play the if game. If she's found out, what happens to her?
She dies,
yeah. Because Jacob said, whoever you find it with.
Yeah.
Right? So, and so if she dies, then who doesn't come?
Benjamin.
Yeah.
The 12th son. Right? So, I mean, a whole tribe is on the line with this. And God, despite the circumstances, preserves it, right? Why? Because he's for this man, plain and simple. Also here at the end of 42, God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Implied in this is God blesses his people and can enrich his people even in the midst of their affliction and oppression. So just an amazing thing when God's for you, it doesn't matter. Like, if God is for us, what can man do against us? What can anyone do against us, right?
Yeah, when Laban shared that with Jacob, that had to be a pretty big faith builder. For Jacob.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here's another, you know, Jacob sees, he's able to see these 20 years. It was tough, but God was with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he was able to give credit. He knew that.
Yeah.
But then Laban, you know, him, God's, you know, going to Laban,
yes.
He knows is a pagan.
Yes.
That's a...
Yeah.
That had to be pretty big.
Yes. Yeah, that hits Jacob right there in the moment when he hears it. It's like, even when I don't know it, God is for me. God is protecting me.
Yeah.
He's working. He's always working. Yeah, so I mean, absolutely. Faith builder. We don't have to experience what God is doing for us or to even know what God is doing for us in order to know that he is actually for us and working for us. Yeah, awesome observation. That's great. So here Laban responds, then Laban answered and said to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. So again, the household. Who's the head of the household? So Laban's like, no, legitimately, this is all mine. But he's in a corner. His accusation has been proved false, and God has confronted him. But what can I do this day for these my daughters and for their children whom they have borne? So right here, Laban is confirming to Jacob that, yes, that's what I would have done. I would have sent you away empty-handed if I had my way. So, I mean, it just that exposes the degree to which Laban was preparing to take advantage of Jacob. So, and if not for God, he would have succeeded. So he's the one who instigates the covenant. Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So the covenant here is about a witness. It's to be a testimony between the two of them. What's interesting about this is that every time that there's been a covenant made between someone and Abraham or Isaac, it's been a recognition of the patriarch, so either Abraham or Isaac, it's been a recognition of his superiority. So Abimelech recognizes that Isaac is blessed by God, and he seeks a covenant of a peace and agreement there that he's not going to do him any harm. So looking at Isaac, that he's superior. Same kind of thing happens with Abraham. When did he make a covenant with somebody? Was it with Abimelech as well?
Abraham?
Yeah, Abraham.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So same kind of thing, recognizing Abraham's greatness. And so what is Laban doing in proposing a covenant at this point? Mm-hmm. You are superior. Mm-hmm.
So is that why Jacob took the stone then first? Because I thought that was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's something interesting going on here because you have... It's almost like you have these stones being set up at different points, but they all kind of refer to the same stones. Like there's a stone and there's a pillar. I think there's something going on as a relationship between the two. But yes, I don't know if Jacob taking the stone is a sign that he's the superior one, but it is his action that makes... It's an agreement. Yes, let's make a covenant. So I don't know what the significance is actually of him taking the stone first.
Well, he took the stone in 28:8 at Bethel.
Okay.
So he took the stone.
Yes.
And he put under his
head. Is it put the exact same way? Jacob took a stone?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's probably something. That was the beginning of his time going out of the land, and here's the end of his time outside of the land. So that's probably... It's probably a parallel. Like what you saw at Bethel and what Jacob has just confessed here is those two things are linked. That was 28:8?
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome.
Or
18. 18? Okay.
18.
Okay. Set it up as a pillar. Yeah, and he does the same thing. He sets that up as a pillar there. Yeah. So Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. So whenever you make a covenant, there's a covenant meal that's involved there. And Laban called it Jagar Sadutha. Does anybody know what that means?
The heap of witness.
The heap of witness, yes. So let it be a witness, and it's a heap, Jagar Sadutha. But Jacob called it Galeed. What does Galeed mean? The heap of witness. So there's two different languages going on here, right? So, and so Laban said, this is a heap of witness. So exactly what they named it, that's what it is. And actually, you read along in Hebrew, it's like, it says exactly, it says Galeed. Zoth Galeed, something like that. Between you and me today. Therefore, he named it Galeed. So this is just I think that the repetition here is just highlighting the establishment of the covenant. But then also Mizpah. Anybody know what Mizpah means?
Watchtower.
Watchtower, yeah. And so the Lord watch, right? The Lord watch. So the names of the stones and the heaps or whatever are used in what's said about them. All right. And that's how we know, like, these names are significant in the Bible typically. We don't want to carry it too far, but these things work together. They say something about each other. But the Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. So it's here's this relationship that's coming to an end, and it's been full of conflict for 20 years, and it's ending in a covenant of conflict, basically. I'm not going to be able to keep my eye on you, so the Lord's going to. God's going to. And so Laban is still talking, if you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, so again, saying my daughters, not your wives, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. God will know and God will judge if you do anything, but if you do anything poorly, act poorly toward my daughters. And again, if he does take other wives besides Leah and Rachel, then that will obviously that complicates a whole lot of things. But typically, wives that come later, there's not like this first wife thing, and she kind of rules the roost of the wives. Typically, the later wives are afforded more, or it seems to work out that later wives are have privilege and preeminence and things like that. An example of that would be when Bathsheba becomes David's wife. Bathsheba wasn't David's first wife and was, I think, what, number five or number six, actually. So it's just an example there. So Laban's, that's typically how it happens, so don't you dare do it. Laban continues in verse 51, see this heap and the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness. So again, so I think, I didn't work this out, but I think there's some kind of parallelism going between all of these because of all the repetition. The heap is a witness, the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap to me. So it becomes that boundary. I think, Aaron, you brought that up earlier. Boundary, a border, and to do harm. And this picks up from Genesis 26, what Abimelech said to Isaac in that covenant. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, so this is still establishing the terms of the covenant. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, so we might better put this, gods of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. This is a plural verb. Judge between us. So this would also be gods here. Because remember, Elohim, it's can be used as a reference to the one true God, referring to singular, but then also the heem ending on it is actually a plural ending. So it can be used in a plural meaning. And how that is determined is what's the number involved in the verb? Is it singular or plural? And in this case, it's plural. So Laban is referring to multiple gods here. But what does Jacob do? Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. So he doesn't go. I think this is put in a way that there would be no confusion. So it's not the God of Abraham, and it's not the God of Nahor, even though the God of Abraham would communicate Abraham's God. But in the way that Laban puts it, it's confusing. You're talking about the God of Abraham before he left, before he was called out from his father's house to go to a land that he will be shown? Or what are you talking about? And so to avoid that confusion, Jacob swears by the fear of Isaac. fear of his father Isaac. And so that would again bring up Genesis 26. He's seeing in his life an experience that's similar to Isaac's life in Genesis 26. Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. So they're both fulfilling their roles in this covenant. So there was eating beforehand, there's eating now. And so this is all just part of a covenant ceremony. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. And so, like I said before, this is a meal. It's a family meal, extended family meal that's full of tension. It's Thanksgiving that has gone terribly, terribly, terribly wrong.
So they agree to this covenant. They set up these heaps, and then Laban's like, and you can't marry anyone else. Like, he just tacks that on and has to agree to it, or is he just... It just seemed like...
No, I don't... I think that's part of the parallelism. Like, if I had it worked out, it's probably where it would come in. But that's coming in the middle, at least, of what Laban is demanding. And so this would be Laban's main concern. I don't want, since I can't get what I want out of this house that is yours now. So he's recognizing Jacob has a house, a household. He is doing what he can to prevent Jacob from doing anything that would minimize his daughters.
Yeah, because Laban's getting nothing else out of this. Yeah. I mean, normally, yeah. when you're coming up with a covenant or whatever, both parties, unless it's God, because it's usually a two-sided covenant, but he's like getting nothing out of it. So
he can't be attacked.
So maybe he throws that in. That's all I'm getting out of this.
Yeah.
Is Laban just a helicopter dad, or is he? Or is he just seeing that his money man is leaving?
I think he's seeing that his money man is leaving, and he's
I don't think he cares a whole lot.
The blessing, everything, because he recognized that he was being blessed when Jake was there. He was recognizing that.
Now he may be playing. So you remember when Laban does show up back in Genesis 24 with when the servant, Abraham's servant, is searching for a wife for Isaac. Laban does show up in that context, and there's some, like, he sees what's coming with that servant, and he's like, oh, there's something behind this. And so there may be a thing like, okay, that blessing is going with Jacob. He may be preserving for himself a potential future opportunity where he can still benefit from the blessing that's on Jacob through what comes after, but only if it would be his daughters, something from his daughters, whether their children or whatever. I don't think Laban is looking out for the good of his daughters. Totally.
Yeah.
So
he hasn't for the last 20 years.
Yeah. So I mean, his daughters are the ones who are like, he's a dirt bag. So, one thing that I missed was back in verse 46. So Jacob also set, so Laban has set up this pillar and this witness, right? These stones. Jacob also does that. And when he does this, and there's that's when the first time eating happens. This seems to provide a second witness. So Jacob is also communicating, I don't trust you. Like, I don't trust you that you don't have your fingers crossed behind your back. As you're making this covenant with me. So he's providing a second witness to ensure that Laban will hold up to the terms of the covenant. Yeah. All right, so early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. So even the way that, if we didn't get it by now, what Laban is interested in is his house. Moses emphasizes that again by calling him his grandchildren, his daughters. I mean, that's true, but that's been what Laban has been about, and bless them. And so this blessing is important. It doesn't really do anything for them. It just, it is a, you go with him now. You're part of his house. So you do see Laban doing something good here. He departs, he returns home. And we don't ever hear from him again. We don't, I don't, he doesn't come up in the genealogy or anything like that. He doesn't come up like people who are descended from Laban later on. I don't think he does. Yeah. So a greedy life with a poor end, right? He had an opportunity to be a part of the blessing of God, and he did actually experience that, and he lost it. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And so he called the name of that place Mahanaim. So God's camp is related to Mahanaim, except this is plural. So camp is actually, Mahanaim is camps. So that's Jacob identifies this place as Mahanaim. Now, there are a couple things that go on with this passage. So this is the conclusion. It's actually a bridge. But here we have God appearing to Jacob, and that corresponds to how how chapter 31 began with, not only does Jacob observe how he overhears what Laban's sons say, and then he observes that Laban is not favorable toward him anymore, and then God appears to him. So there's so God appears to him at the beginning, and that initiates the him leaving, and then God appears to him at the end. So bracketing this whole thing is God, and what's been emphasized throughout is God's been protecting Jacob, and bracketing the whole passage is, in fact, that God's been protecting him. At the same time, this is also kind of bridging into what's to come as far as when Jacob goes to meet Esau. The questions that are here is, okay, well, why is this camp here on at the eastern border? You have to actually go back further into Genesis to get that. Why is this camp here at the eastern border of the Promised Land? They're ringing a bell. Anybody? So these are, it's camps of angels on the east. Yes. What does God place? Yeah. Flaming swords, cherubim there to prevent anybody from returning, getting back into the garden. Here, the Promised Land there's a correspondence, there's a parallel between the land and the Promised Land and Eden. That actually comes out a little bit later as the land is described, especially in Deuteronomy. But so these angels are here. So that actually brings up a question. Are these angels here, are they for or against Jacob? Chapter 31 says yes, but chapter 32 is still a question mark. Coming back into the land, confronting Esau, are these angels here for me or not? And that case is laid out as you see Jacob just wrestling between, well, and quite literally wrestling as the chapter ends. You see Jacob making his plans to protect himself and at least part of his family, and then also depending on God. God, you told me to return. You need to protect me from my brother. This represents God's force, but is God actually going to protect Jacob, or is he going to punish Jacob because of now he's back in the land? I mean, technically God doesn't have to bless Jacob anymore as far like not punish him for what he's done to Esau, things like, so there are things that up in the air. Like if you already know where this is going, you know the answer to this question. This camp represents, he's for Jacob. But at this point, if you're just reading like, well, what are they doing there? As you look back, you can see, yeah, protecting. But as you look forward, is it going to be the same?
Are you saying that the reader doesn't know that, or that Jacob wouldn't know that?
I think a reader is the first time through. If he's tracking, yeah, then he would like, okay, what's going to happen? He's about to go and see. Yeah. He's going back in the land. Who's in the land? Esau. Going back to Genesis 3, that angel is not allowing people to go in, yeah, into the land. So seeing a correspondence there.
Oh.
So those two things will go together.
I got you.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it turns out that this is a mute question. Like, yes, these camps are here to protect Jacob. But we don't actually find that out until the very end of the chapter when Jacob wrestles with God, well, with a man, and that becomes an object lesson that Jacob has striven with man and God and prevailed. But how has he prevailed? It's because of God, and that's why he walks away limping, that kind of thing. So this is fascinating. It connects back to the beginning. It also connects all the way back to Jacob's time at Bethel when he was leaving the land. So now he's about to come back in the land, and God's camp of angels are meeting him there. And so it's like this. It's amazing how God's appearances work out here in this chapter, but then link back and then point forward. So it's just the Bible's amazing in this way, and it's communicating something. So that's what I have for us tonight. Anything else? Okay. Well, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the time that you've given to us in studying your Word. We thank you that you are for Jacob, and because you are for Jacob, we can know that you are for us, especially in Christ. And so we want to trust you and depend upon you, and to carry our lives with integrity before you, and knowing that even when we are oppressed and persecuted, when we are struck down, that you continue to protect us and bless us in an ultimate sense, and will even do good for us in those times. And so encourage us with these words, and we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.